Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Red Fox Blogger with your host, Kel Fritzy. She's the infidel your imam warned you about, and there's no holding her back as she shares her opinions, insights, information, and outrage discussing the political entity known as Islam. We are at a critical juncture in our history, and if the threat of Islam is not faced up front, right now, then we will lose the freedoms of individuality, civic justice, and autonomy of thought we rightly enjoy, and instead see our values replaced with kinetic and civilizational jihad, Sharia law, and oppression permanently. Don't let the memory of our soldiers, past and present, go in vain. It is up to us to protect the legacy for which they fought so hard. We have an obligation to honor their memory today and for future generations. Join Kel Mondays at 3 p.m. Eastern and Fridays at 7 p.m. Eastern on Blog Talk Radio. But leave your political correctness well away from her phone lines and chat room. And be warned, Kel takes no prisoners.
GoDamnMedia.com.
Changes.
We are justified in doing anything we can to survive.
And hello, everybody, and welcome to the Red Fox Blogger. I am your host, Kel Fritzy, where I am left to my own devices on Fridays. But I'm not quite going to be left alone to my own devices because my friend, Michael Green, returns. And we will be discussing issues that are going on in the Middle East, and of course, in particular, Israel and the Gazan Arabs. Before I bring Michael on, though, I have something here I'd like to share with you. This is the Hamas Charter. This was written in 1988. It has since been updated. But just to give you an idea of this movement, the Islamic Resistance Movement draws its guidelines from Islam, derives from its thinking, interpretations, and views about existence, life, and humanity, refers back to it for its conduct, and is inspired by it in whatever step it takes. The Islamic Resistance Movement is one of the wings of the Muslim Brotherhood in Palestine. The Muslim Brotherhood Movement is a world organization, the largest Islamic movement in the modern era. It is characterized by a profound understanding, by precise notions, and by a complete comprehensiveness of all concepts of Islam in all domains of life, views and beliefs, politics and economics, education and society, jurisprudence and rule, indoctrination and teaching, the arts and publications, the hidden and the evident, and all the other domains of life. The basic structure of the Islamic Resistance Movement consists of Muslims who are devoted to Allah and worship Him verily. As it is written, I have created man and devil for the purpose of their worship of Allah. Those Muslims are cognizant of their duty towards themselves, their families, and country, and they have been relying on Allah for all of that. They have raised the banner of jihad in the face of the oppressors in order to extricate the country and the people from the oppressors' desecration, filth, and evil. My apologies. The movement welcomes all Muslims who share its belief and thinking, commit themselves to its course of action, keep it secret, and to aspire to join its ranks in order to carry out their duty. Allah will reward them. This is a very, very, very long manifesto. I am not inclined to call it the charter. I do indeed call it, it's a manifesto is what it is. I'm going to put the link in the chat room for everybody to bookmark, and please, it is a very long read. I have given you a little bit of what Hamas is all about. You have heard that they are beholden to the word of Allah. But I want to introduce Michael Green once again. And Michael Green is a prolific supporter of the American veterans and a staunch counter-jihadist. He is also an ordained minister. And with that, I welcome you back to the show, Michael. And how are you tonight?
Kel, thanks for bringing me back on. It's a pleasure to be on your program.
We have been inundated with news out of the Middle East in regards of the what I call the Gazan Arabs and Israel. We had a development today in which an Israeli soldier was kidnapped. Could you bring us up to speed on that?
Well, first, let's discuss that there was a truce that all sides agreed to. It was initiated by Secretary of State John Kerry and the Secretary General of the United Nations, Ban Ki-moon. By the way, this was either the fourth or fifth truce since the beginning of the fighting in Gaza. Just a number of minutes into this truce, which commenced 8 a.m. time in Israel, a Hamas team of terrorists used a tunnel to infiltrate the Israeli side of the Gaza border, and they had a suicide bomber who was able to detonate his vest of explosives and catching off guard a group of Israeli soldiers. Two of them were tragically killed, and the third one was abducted by a Hamas terrorist and currently is being held as a hostage, we'll say. So this is just extremely egregious, but not surprising that Hamas would double-cross Israel. And, of course, I would say that Secretary Kerry and the Secretary General of the United Nations look rather foolish today, trusting these people. I am totally opposed to all truces, any type of temporary cease of hostilities or warfare, for the express reason that, as you mentioned, the Hamas Charter, I don't want to get too lengthy, but I do need to reference one brief section of it that talks about peace settlements. It's actually the 13th article of the Hamas Charter.
Mm-hmm.
It says, peace initiatives and so-called peaceful solutions, any international conferences are in contradiction to the principles of the Islamic resistance movement. Those conferences are no more than a means to appoint the infidels as arbitrators in the land of Islam. There is no solution for the Palestinian problem except by jihad.
This is very surprising to me. I personally call it a manifesto, because they do not follow the Golden Rule. They do not follow the Magna Carta. However, they can draw out documents in which they expect the West will respect.
Well, what's astounding is that anyone who has access to an internet connection and can use Google, Google's kind of well-known today, can pull up the Hamas Charter, just as you have done, I have done, and scores of other people, and they could read the precepts and tenets and statements put forth therein. So the idea that you would enter into any kind of truce, even for a solitary single minute with these terrorists, is absurd, and it's dangerous. Dangerous now because two more brave Israeli soldiers have made the ultimate sacrifice, and tragically one of them is now in the hands of these savages. You know, the Israeli government, unfortunately, I think in this instance has been very poor judgment. And we understand a lot of pressure has been put on them by the Obama administration. I don't think Israel's too concerned with the UN, because the UN are relatively irrelevant and they're not to be taken seriously. But there's other entities out there in the political arena globally that, of course, have been exerting pressure on the Israeli government.
What do you suppose is going to happen with this? Because one thing we know about Israelites is when one of their own is taken, they strive to bring him home. And this, living or dead, whenever there is a suicide bomber, say in Tel Aviv, people go out of their way to bring the remains home, and that means even going to the sidewalks and putting devastating damage into the body bag so that the Jewish person is brought home and given a proper burial, unlike the Gazan Arabs who refuse to do that. They don't care about their own people. They only recognize them as martyrs. What do you suppose Benjamin Netanyahu would do about this latest scenario with the kidnapped soldier?
That's a difficult question to respond to, because at this stage, so much sacrifice has been made by the Israeli Defense Forces. Over 60 of them have been killed, and scores of them have been wounded. Israel is a small country, and, of course, every single solitary person is so important to them, understandably. In the past, unfortunately, they have negotiated with Hamas, and they have released scores of terrorists to get back, of course, Gilad Shalit, who was held captive for an enormous length of time. So Israel has always had a disposition of willing to, unfortunately, somewhat make concessions to terrorists to get back one of their people. Understandably, and of course for the loved ones of this soldier, you know, who are going through enormous emotional pain tonight, and anyone who knows this young man, you know, who's taken captive. At the same time, negotiating with terrorists, I believe, is the wrong approach. It just emboldens them and, of course, gives them a greater desire to kidnap others, hold them hostage, and use them as bargaining chips. This time around, it's hard to say, to predict what the Israeli government will do. We know in the past they have, of course, negotiated for the release of that Israeli in return, even releasing hundreds, if not larger numbers, of Palestinian terrorists. This time around, I wouldn't try to speculate at this point because they're right in the midst of a war. And they need to go full throttle and not consider for one second any other alleged ceasefires or truces.
It's amazing that you bring up Gilad Shalit. I actually saw him speak in Toronto last year. It will be going on nearly a year. Israel, they unfortunately did negotiate with terrorists, and I like what Verbalbyte said, and I agree with him, is that we never negotiate with terrorists. But Israel, they have very much connectedness. They love life, and they are humanitarians. It's unfortunate that they had to have that trade to bring Private Shalit home. This person now, though, that they had kidnapped, and he was part of a team that was clearing up the tunnels, the terrorist tunnels, from so-called Palestine into Israel. His name being Second Lieutenant, he's Second Lieutenant Petter Golden, and he's 23 years old. I do not know what Benjamin Netanyahu is going to do. What do you think will happen? Will they negotiate again?
Well, we got to understand the political system in Israel. They have the Knesset, you know, the Israeli cabinet. And, for example, during this particular operation, the cabinet was consulted, and they had lengthy meetings to come to a final decision as what to do. You know, the last was that they were going to expand the operation, and they called up 16,000 additional reservists. And they seem completely committed to the destruction of all Hamas tunnels. But I believe they need to go further, and they need to take Hamas out entirely, or they'll just revisit this in the future. Israel has been in Gaza before in 2012 and then in 2009, two previous operations that were somewhat short-lived. Once again, the pressure from the United States government, international pressure, the lies and propaganda in news media in the U.S. and, of course, in Europe and in the Arab world, depicting Israel as a villain, demonizing them. This is the typical rhetoric that we hear anytime this small nation goes to defend itself once it's attacked. What prompted this, of course, was the three Jewish teenagers that were kidnapped and slaughtered, and then subsequently various rockets were fired into Israel, and of course Israel proceeded. But many people don't know that the Israeli government was aware that Hamas had been planning a summer offensive, and these infiltration tunnels were part of an operation that they intended on implementing to send in teams of Hamas fighters infiltrating Israel and, of course, bringing death and destruction.
Israel has been giving the Gaza Strip so many chances, and they granted land to these well, they're usurpers. That's the only way I can describe them. They're not Palestinians. Palestine is an artificial concept. They're what they are Gazan Arabs. But all the same, Israel was willing to give them an opportunity to take a little piece of land in the Gaza Strip, cultivate it, turn it into something absolutely beautiful. But they were unable to do that because they want to push, of course, they want to push Israel into the sea. Everything they touch turns to poison. They have a bit of a cosmopolitan air about them. They have their shopping malls, their supermarkets. As a matter of fact, per capita, they're the most overweight people on the planet. I still can't figure that one out, but it is what it is. But they just cannot engage in cultivation. They cannot engage in proliferation. And they cannot engage in technological advancement. They've had so many opportunities globally. Gaza could have been a beautiful, beautiful addition to the Middle East, but what they chose to do instead was concentrate on their hatred of Israel. What do you think about that?
They have a culture of death. The culture in the Palestinian territories, if that was what we can call them, technically, they're really called Judea and Samaria. And this is part of the land of Israel. And we can go back thousands of years and see that, of course, the Jewish people were there. And we understand from the Bible that God gave them that land. And they have tried to live with their neighbors, but they've been attacked repeatedly since 1948. And it goes deeper than just land. We discussed it on your last program. If we look into Islamic ideology, we'll see the enormous an extremely overt hatred that Islamic teachings put forth against Jews per se. Hamas is not just committed to the destruction of the people in Israel, but they are committed to the annihilation of Jews worldwide. Now, of course, it would be difficult for them to accomplish that, but that is part of their charter and part of their belief. They believe that this is the land of Islam, and that in a pure Islamic state, there are to be no others but those who are faithful followers of Muhammad.
I'm just looking in the chat room, and Verbal Bite brought up a very, very, very salient point in that Palestine was created by Jordan, not Israel, and Gaza was created by Egypt, not Israel. And he's totally correct on that. These are nomads that were wandering around. Jordan didn't want them. Egypt didn't want them. This is why Egypt is actually supporting Israel at this point, because Egypt does not want these people back. I think Jordan is the same thing. They are not wanting to have these violent subhumans back in their respective countries. But I think Jordan has a responsibility to take them back because that's where they originated from.
Well, the other Arab countries have used the Palestinian issue for decades as a means to vilify Israel, of course, to attack Israel using Hamas and even Fatah as surrogates. Hamas is funded by Saudi Arabia, by Qatar, by part of the Jordanian government, it's been determined. So, you know, within the Gulf states, especially the oil-rich ones, powerful Arab men have a deep hatred for Israel, and they have a deep hatred for Jews. So they've given enormous sums of money to Hamas. Hamas has used at least 40% of this financing, what have you, to build these tunnels, very sophisticated tunnels, very well constructed, reinforced with concrete, electrical cables running in them, kind of like railroad tracks, what have you, to bring on different types of apparatus, rockets, and all kinds of weaponry. So Hamas is not interested, of course, in bettering the life of the Palestinians in Gaza, because they're using international aid to fund their terrorist activities. It's absolutely criminal for any government to give aid to this organization, and certainly here in America we've done it. We'll probably continue to do it unless there's strong opposition from our House of Representatives. So, yeah, it's a serious issue, and once again, they have a culture of death. They believe in martyrdom.
Yeah.
And so for them to die, or even their civilians to die, in their warped, depraved understanding of things, they believe that these individuals will be rewarded in paradise. So for them to use human beings as shields, even little Palestinian children, they have no reservation about doing it. And, of course, Israel then gets maligned for those deaths. But the blood is on the hands and heads of Hamas.
Now, in light of what happened today, these are the latest developments in that this soldier was kidnapped while manning one of the tunnels. And to remind people, his name is Second Lieutenant Heather Golden, who is 23 years old. Will the world stage take note, and will the UN stop with the ceasefires? Will Benjamin Netanyahu say no more ceasefires? Because the UN and other organizations wanted these ceasefires so that they could bring in humanitarian aid to, surprise, 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 the Gaza Strip.
Well, it's all based on humanitarian aid that, you know, they're running low on food, medicine, supposedly other things. You know, possibly they are, but this is war, and it might sound brutal. Israel must use its full might, must bear down on Hamas, and they must eviscerate this terrorist organization, and not just destroy their tunnels. They need to destroy their ability to wage war, to wage a terrorist war against the state of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
I hope the Israeli government is fully committed now, and after this last egregious violation of this truce, that any future attempts to bring some kind of cessation to this fighting, I hope, will be flatly rejected.
I'm just reading something in the chat room right now, and this is from Bigfoot, and that, men, women, and children of the Gazan Arab persuasion, as it were, are definitely soldiers. They're soldiers of war. But Bigfoot brought up a really good point in that Hamas regards all Israeli Jews as to be military as well. And this jogged my memory. I was looking at some footage not too long ago about there was an imam in Toronto, and he was allowed to be handed a megaphone in which he said that all Jews over the age of 18 are legitimate targets for annihilation. I was rather concerned about that. I do have a sound clip. I'm probably going to look for that in a moment. It is just absolutely disgusting to me that that they're allowed to speak this way about Jewish people. Like, there's a difference in that we love life. I'm a Christian Zionist, and I love life. But we all know that my apologies. I've got something popping up here, and it's distracting me. My apologies, Michael. We do not endorse the death of anybody, but if death is to occur, so it be that. We have to protect our interests. We have to protect our democracies. Islam and Hamas in particular has to be annihilated once and for all. Now, Hamas is an outbanned organization in many Western states. However, they are still allowed, the Palestinians, the Gazan Arabs, are still allowed to engage in their hate campaign. How do we deal with that?
Well, the only solution or possible solution is for the Israeli Defense Forces, you know, the government has to sanction it, to be given the go-ahead to destroy Hamas. Now, that was not their initial objective in this operation. There's a lot of talk internationally about, you know, well, would international politics approve of that, because it would be a bloody engagement and more civilians in Gaza would die. Of course, more Israeli soldiers would be killed and wounded.
Yeah.
There's no other alternative, a realistic alternative. And I'm not going to try to predict what the Israeli government will do. You know, Israeli politics are somewhat a little convoluted at times, unfortunately. There is a leftist movement in Israel. It's the Labor Party. Thank God they're not in power. The Likud Party is. Now, there are two other people within the Israeli government that are very, very strong individuals. There's a man named Naftali Bennett, who is the economy minister, and another man named Avigdor Lieberman. And some people think he's a bit extreme, but we're dealing with an extreme ideology, and we're dealing with an extreme organization that is determined to inflict as much death and destruction as possible on this small country. You know, it's interesting. I did some research, and if you just look at the background, of course, of Hamas, and you look at what capabilities they have about 15,000 fighters, it's estimated at. So to date, the IDF has probably only taken out a certain number of in the hundreds. And they have a lot more to do if they don't want to revisit this in the future. You know, we know that Islam is behind it. It's an Islamic ideology that is the issue in terms of what is the inspiration and motivation for these people. And that's not addressed in the public arena, in the international arena, and of course it won't be because it's not politically correct to say that. I have to say, as an American, I am just disgusted with John Kerry and, of course, the so-called president we have, especially in light of what happened. You know, it's laughable because there were statements made by both Kerry and I think the president, that they're going to attempt to speak with two countries, Turkey and Qatar, which actually finance Hamas, to get them on board to negotiate the release of this Israeli soldier. Of course, that's absurd because they're big players in this and whatnot. Now, the UN has condemned this. Of course, they had no choice to. You know, previously the UN was trying to vilify Israel, but now they had to condemn the violation by Hamas, and then they condemned the abduction of the Israeli soldier. We're going to hear a lot of hand-wringing. We're going to hear a lot of nonsensical talk and absurdities about how to resolve this now, and, you know, we can kind of try to negotiate with them to get this soldier back. Hamas will keep this young soldier as a pawn, I believe. I don't believe they'll kill him anytime soon. I don't want to even think about the conditions they'll probably keep him in. It's tragic. At the same time, I hope Israel stays committed to the operation and expands it. You know, do they want to go back in 3 or 4 years and deal with the same type of scenario?
Like they did with Gilad Shalit?
Yeah, well, you know, once again, I don't believe that terrorist organizations should be negotiated with. It sets a bad precedent, and what it does is opens the door for future attempts to kidnap other individuals, whether they be Israeli civilians or members of the IDF, and hold them for ransom, not money, but, you know, for the release of terrorists that are sitting in Israeli prisons. No Western nation should ever negotiate with these savages. The thing to do is to seek them out and to obliterate them, you know, to take them down. Hamas needs to be taken down. It needs to cease to exist. And Israel can do it. Whether they will, we'll have to wait and see what the developments will be. But as time goes on, I believe we're just going to see a lot more of what we've already seen. And tragically, there will be civilians killed. But we have to keep something in mind. And I'm not trying to be a brutal person, but during World War II, a large percentage of Germans supported the Nazis. And many of them perished in that war. And that's what happens during war. You know, there is collateral damage, and civilians are inadvertently killed. I can't say I have any great love for the people in Gaza. I can't say I would like to see them all killed, especially young children. Of course, they're the most innocent victims of war. But at the same time, if you take a look at their ideology, and you see how the people in Gaza act if an Israeli soldier is killed. Excuse me, let me back up. When those three Israeli Jewish boys were captured, probably tortured and killed, in Gaza they were dancing in the streets. They were passing out sweets.
Yeah.
So these people, let's face it, they're barbaric. They are barbaric. Most of the people in Gaza are very barbaric people. And they support these terrorists. They voted them in. Overwhelmingly, the people of Gaza wanted Hamas to lead them. And in my mind, they are accessories to this conflict. And so if inadvertently that they are taken out, that's unfortunate. But maybe the next generation of terrorists won't be spawned from these people, because that's what they're doing. They're spawning the next generation of Jew killers and bloodthirsty terrorists.
I think this is a very abhorrent situation. And I think that Israel was trying to be benevolent in offering these people land, but it's beyond that now. It's about the deaths of people. I think that you're right, Michael. I agree with you wholeheartedly about this, is that it's got to be done once and for all. I think that outside international interference should be halted. Let Israel get in there and finish the job once and for all, because Hamas and the Gazan Arabs have proven that they are incapable of coexistence.
Well, there is no coexistence. Once again, we'll just go back to the Hamas charter. It says unequivocally here in their preamble, Israel will exist and shall continue to exist until Islam, not Hamas, it says Islam, will obliterate it, just as it has obliterated others before.
Yeah.
And it couldn't be any more clear. Their objective is the obliteration of Israel, not the entire land. Of course, they want to occupy the land. It's the inhabitants.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So there's no negotiation with these individuals. And we can only hope and pray that Israel finishes the job. I think it'll be an extended campaign. To do this properly, it will take a number of months and a lot of fighting, and there will be losses on both sides. Look, war is not a pretty thing. War is very graphic. It's horrific. It brings pain and suffering and misery, physically, emotionally, mentally. I've seen so many young Americans, you know, have been to battle, who've sustained catastrophic wounds, and sure, it's a terrible thing. And every one of those young men I met said they would do it all over again, you know.
Yeah.
If that was the case, they would go back on the battlefield to fight for their country, you know, to fight this enemy. This enemy is committed to our destruction, so we have to be committed to respond accordingly. You know, we might as well just roll over and you know, kind of give up, but that'll never be the case.
I have a clip here I want you to listen to. I alluded to a former, he's a former leader. He's a former president of Palestine House here in Canada. And as we know, the Al-Quds rallies take place every year, particularly at the end of Eid, which ended on Tuesday. The person with whom I was referring, his name is Ilyas Hazina, like I say, former president of Palestine House, and he attended the annual Al-Quds Day rally that took place on August 3rd, 2003 in Toronto. Now, in his speech to a crowd of hundreds holding anti-Israeli banners and waving the flags of Palestine, Iran, Syria, the Assad regime at the time, and Hezbollah, Hazina uttered a threatening message to the Jews living in Israel while talking in favor of endorsing a strategy that will give the Israeli Jews an ultimatum to leave immediately the country or to be shot dead. This is what he had to say, and I'm going to share this with you, Michael, and the listeners. And I'll put the link in the chat room for everybody to bookmark.
We have to give them an ultimatum. You have to leave Jerusalem. You have to leave Palestine. And the people of Palestine who've been waiting in refugee camps in Lebanon, in Syria, in Egypt, and in Jordan must have the right to return to their homes. We cannot bring people from Russia and from Europe to live in the home that my grandfather built. It's unacceptable. It's not justice. And we will restore justice. I want to remind you of how police work. When somebody tries to rob a bank, the police gets in, they don't negotiate. And we've been negotiating with them for 65 years. We say, get out or you're dead. We give them 2 minutes and then we start shooting. And that's the only way that they will understand.
That's right.
I am a reminder of this verse from the Quran. وَاعِدُّوا لَهُمْ مَصَطَعْتُمْ مِنْ قُوَى وَرِبَاطَ الْخَيْرِ. That's the only thing that they understand.
And once again, I want to thank my friend, Blazing Cat, for that link. I have another one, Michael, I'm going to play in a moment. We have somebody that will be joining us in a moment, and that is Moving Forward. And he has some news going on that he would like to share with us. So, Moving, please call in anytime and share with Michael and myself what you have for us. But what do you think when you hear these people unfettered sharing this, that any Jew over the age of 18 is eligible for a shot in the head? This is what Israel deals with day and night.
No, I mean, as you said earlier, every human being, especially those that are Jewish in the nation of Israel, are a legitimate target according to Hamas and Islamic Jihad and any other Muslim fascist organization. Yeah, it's about the annihilation of the Jews. They'd love to see a second Holocaust. You know, the book Mein Kampf, that hate manifesto written by Adolf Hitler, is the most commonly translated book in the Middle East, in the Arab world, and has been for an enormous length of time. These people are basically, to use that expression, Islamo-Nazis. And they relish and love the idea to see the Jewish people of Israel wiped off the face of the earth. And that's the type of enemy they face. They're surrounded by their enemies on all sides. And it's really, I think, a miracle, an act of God, that they came back into being a nation in 1948, as the Bible prophesies, and of course that they have defeated their enemies in every major battle. And we're talking primarily about 1948, 1967, the Six-Day War, and then in 1973.
Oh, yeah.
And subsequently, it's just been a lot of brutal terrorist attacks by these savages that they have attempted to, you know, do the same. But the United States government is actually a disgrace under Barack Obama, and its support of Israel has been absolutely terrible. But now Obama claims he's going to speak to these other governments and, you know, attempt to get this young man released. But there is some news on the Internet that it's possible. Hamas is claiming that the missing IDF soldier may have died during the ambush in Gaza. And, you know, with them, you never can tell whether or not this is just the dissimulation of some lies, or if he was wounded and he succumbed to his wounds and he did die. It's tragic once again, but I hope Israel does not base any decisions upon the abduction of this soldier. You know, it would be a grave error. We'll have to wait and see.
We are sitting on tenterhooks about that one. Absolutely. We have somebody that's joining us, though, right now, and this is moving forward, Michael, and he has some news that he would like to impart with us. And moving, hello and welcome to the program. How are you tonight?
Oh, hey, Kel, and hey, Michael. Good show tonight, covering events over there in Gaza. You know, don't know what to say there. Just hope that it all works out well for everybody. A little bit of jihadi news here on the home front in the USA and Canada. This affects Canada as well.
Mm-hmm.
Don't necessarily think it affects United Kingdom or other countries, but indirectly it does as far as the methods of what's happened. After going many years without television, I moved out even to a more rural area than I was. And the new hacienda, the new house, you know, came equipped with television hooked up. So I've been watching RFD TV, which is rural television.
Mm.
And it serves, depending on the stats or survey, between 40 million people or 67 million people in the United States in rural America. Right, and what's happened is CEO has been on the television for his channel with some concerns, and this is the concern. His programming the rural television was canceled in Colorado and Arizona recently, just this past year, and replaced with Al Jazeera by Comcast. And apparently this is happening in different regions all across the country, in the United States and Canada, who use that RFD TV, the rural television, you know, frequented by farmers and targeted toward them. The market for a lot of the market for a lot of the cable and satellite distributors is populated areas. However, I've peeled back the onion a little bit, and things seem to point toward the FCC and the members of the president's cabinet, who are Muslims, influencing replacing the rural needs of America, America's farmers, Canada's farmers who use RFD TV, and replacing the programming with Al Jazeera. And by far, there's more Americans who use this rural channel than there are, you know, American Muslims who look at Al Jazeera. I mean, the percentages, easily the numbers come out to 10-to-1 ratio. So there's no real basis, even in a metropolitan market, to be replacing the programming. I did some more research in a very short time. The folks on Wall Street and the stock traders in the cities, they use RFD TV because they want to see the futures prices and when farmers are going to go to the co-op and cash in or not cash in. Because RFD TV does great better coverage than Wall Street on that. And then the average farmer, when they're up at 3:30 a.m. having their coffee, they're looking at what adjustments to make to their fields that day before they climb on that tractor. And I'll tell you, I have more farm equipment passing me on the road here than I do standard automobiles. So I really think that this RFD TV touches so many people. So why? Why is our networks, Comcast, others, replacing RFD TV with Al Jazeera, who obviously is biased toward the Muslim world for sure. And there's not that many Muslims in Canada and the United States as far as population compared to who uses world television.
No, that there's,
the demographic.
That there's not at this point moving. In Canada, we're sitting at 3.5% Muslims in Canada. But there was a report about 7 months ago in which it was the demographics were articled. Muslims are the fastest growing religion in Canada, whether that be via immigration or propagation.
Yeah, so I'm sitting here in the semi-dark, but I'm going to try. Maybe somebody can type this in the chat room for me because I can't see my keyboard too well.
Okay.
The phone. What we can do is, and this is per the CEO of RFD TV, who I caught for a brief few minutes this morning on the television by his request, is go to rfdtv.com, and you can click on a button where you can send comments to the U.S. FCC, and better still, you can call your congressman in the United States and even Canada, your representatives, and say, hey, I want RFD TV. And I'm no RFD TV Nazi, but I certainly want to be able to turn on the TV and look at RFD TV or RFD TV in HD rather than Al Jazeera, which is just another biased, broadcast system. And I really don't care to know what, it doesn't serve me here locally as to what's going on every day. So I've been getting a lot of use out of RFD TV.
Very
interesting. Kel, I think you're the first Blog Talk Radio show, I think the only place I've seen this referenced is the Philadelphia Inquirer, and that was a while back. So it's not this effort needs to gain some more steam, and we got to get Al Jazeera programming off of our airways and put things that serve our citizens, our patriots, our farmers, people who are doing constructive things like, producing food for the world in the U.S. and Canada. We need to, have stuff for us. And Al Jazeera is not going to do it for us. All that's going to do is bring us pain and suffering and coverage of, the Palestinians and the Gazians and, places we don't care about. So.
And, Michael,
anyway,
do you have any questions? Do you have any questions for Movin yourself, Michael?
No, I don't. Thanks for sharing that. But I can tell you that Al Jazeera has a foothold in the United States, and this happened in the past. It will not be reversed. I don't want to get into too many details to detract from our focus on Israel, but Al Gore, who is the former vice president under Clinton, had a lot to do with that. Look, let's just face the facts. The entire Western world is inundated with this barbaric ideology, and it's coming in different means. It's infiltrating through government, school systems, cable news. I'm sorry, cable TV programming, what have you. We can oppose it, but realistically, I don't think that that's going to do anything substantive. It's going to be there, and, that's why we need to do what we're doing on our end to inform people what this ideology is really about. because, you know, these big corporations that have enormous sums of money, and we talked on previous shows, Kel and I, that Islamist fascists are extremely organized, and they're very well financed. And, you know, that's what you're up against when you're trying to counter what they're doing in the public marketplace.
Well, that's an interesting point, and putting on our higher thinking caps for just a little bit. The business case is, you know, for us in America and Canada, for this RFDTV is simply that it's access to the rural market, which is, the numbers range between 40 and 77 million households approximately in the U.S., and the Muslim business case, even in the urban centers, doesn't even come close. So by contacting RFDTV, RFDTV.com on their website and making noise with the FCC, but not only that, with your senator and congressman and representative, they don't have a business case to stand on. And here's where just like all these other administration scandals in America, you know, with the IRS and, you know, Benghazi and all these other interference, this issue traces directly to the members of the president's cabinet. And I think people need to start looking into this. And that's a higher thinking issue that, we need to press on a little bit. And maybe I'll bring this topic up on the HOV show on Tuesday night. But on the spin this.
Yes. That would be fantastic, Movin, if you could. And can you expand on your radio program on the Halls of Valhalla? You are part of a panel there, and that is Spin This, isn't it, with Igima?
Well, I'm an occasional contributor, just like your show, Kel, from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a regular panelist due to my schedule. But I do like to participate on that Tuesday night show from time to time and just check in. And give a spot report from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
So, but this one topic with RFDTV is we're on solid ground in America and Canada as Christians fighting against the jihad, because there's no business case to replace RFDTV with Al Jazeera. There's no business case. There's not enough of a demographic who cares about Al Jazeera population wise. So. We need to make some noise, and unless we can't roll over and play dead, we just can't do that. So.
No, we certainly cannot. This is the global age of the internet and satellite TVs, and moving what you brought up initially too about the satellite dishes is that I notice in urban centers here in Canada, in Toronto in particular, where we have the biggest infestation of Islam, is that they live in their enclaves, and they're usually in subsidized housing, and they live in apartment buildings. When you drive through that area, you'll see nothing but satellite dishes hanging off the balconies, and we know that they're not watching All My Children or, you know, Dancing with the Stars. We know that they're all tuned into Al Jazeera.
Right. Well, you know, also one important item is the prosperity of our countries with our rural population and our farmers. I mean,
yeah.
This is Agenda 21. I mean,
this is a
fight that we can't let up on. We have to support our farmers and this independent television station that is out there. They support not only the farmers, they support Wall Street with their projections, and there's all kinds of good stuff. And I'd rather have a little bit of Americana, you know, all things American, or I don't know what you'd call it in Canada, but I'd like to have a little taste of rural living and a touch of home rather than, jihad programming. And,
absolutely.
And they're trying to get us to kowtow to this Agenda 21. They do not want to make rural America a good choice for our future citizens. And that's not the way we want things to go. We want people to get out of the cities and produce food and live the dream. if they get put in the honeycomb in the city, they'll be sewer mongers for life under Agenda 21, and that's just me moving. So that's about all I got, Kel.
Moving, as usual, very eloquent, very well said, and very much appreciated.
Y'all take care now.
Thank you, Moving. Thank you very, very much. You can certainly stay with us on the airwaves if you like, unless you
I'll hang out on the panel if you'd like, I'll just talk if you call me out.
Okay. What I'll do is that I will leave your mic open. Michael and myself, we're going to move into some new territory, and I think that you would be instrumental in discussing it. But what I would like to do right now, ladies and gentlemen, is that we are at the top of the hour, and Michael posted this to me. I think it's beautiful. This is the Israeli national anthem, because we are discussing. Okay, Kel, have another shot of whiskey. Okay. We're discussing the issues of what's going on in the Middle East, in particular, of course, Israel and the Gazan Arabs. And just to remind you that Michael Green is a prolific supporter of the American veterans, and he is a staunch counter-jihadist. He is also an ordained minister. Michael sent this to me, and I want to play it for you right now. This is the Israeli national anthem. We will see everybody back here in 3 minutes. Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Red Fox Blogger. I'm your host, Kel Fritzy. Joining me tonight is Michael Green, and we still have Moving Forward with us in the studio. I want to thank everybody that joins us in the studio. We also have Sweet Sue from New Mexico, who works tirelessly on various radio programs to get the shows out for everybody via Twitter. I want to thank Bigfoot, Cal Living, DLC, DLB, that's my doc, Dawa, Monaraka, Moving Forward, of course, joining us. Southern Sense is Common Sense, and that's my Annie Vorpalbite. I want to thank Holger for being here, people who pop in and people who pop out, and I especially, of course, want to thank those that make this possible for me to do the show. And we all appreciate our archive listeners as well. So for you and archive, thank you very much. We are discussing the issue of what is going on in the Middle East, and of course, in particular, what is happening with Israel and the Gazan Arabs, and of course, that's Hamas and the Gaza area. There have been quite a few developments going on within the last few days, within the last few weeks. And Michael, you were discussing the ceasefires, and you and I both came to an agreement in that they never should have happened, because all it did was allow the Gazan Arabs to regroup and come up with new strategies, and they most certainly did with the kidnapping of the Israeli soldier today. If Israel does not comply with ceasefires in the future, if the UN-led, American-led ceasefire initiatives are ignored by Israel, how do you think Israel will henceforth be seen on the world stage?
Well, either way, Israel is going to be seen as the villain in this scenario. I mean, they always are. It'll just be more of a reason for the hate Israel, hate Jew lobby to vilify them, and hopefully they'll come to that conclusion. The problem is the Israeli government has never been good in the propaganda war, so to speak, and not that they need to be, because I don't think there's much they're going to do to turn world opinion in their favor. It's just not going to happen. You have powerful entities like the BBC, CNN. Those are the two main international cable news organizations. And then, of course, you have news organizations within each respective Western nation. And they've always portrayed Israel, except for Fox News in America, as the aggressor, not as the victim. Of course, they are the victim. I don't think Israel should put too much focus and emphasis in this. I think what they need to do is to focus on their military campaign and to bring it to a positive conclusion, which means the entire destruction of Hamas. More people in Gaza will die tragically. There's no other way around it, especially since Hamas will continue to use civilians in Gaza as human shields. And there are videos out there on the internet recently done of Hamas people getting out of their vehicles and beating Gazans, forcing them to remain in the areas, you know, where they want them to become casualties, because they love to parade the dead bodies of young children before the cameras, and the world news media sucks it up and uses it as ammunition to vilify Israel. And it's just going to be a never-ending cycle, you know, of that. Israel has to once and for all just stick to their guns, literally and figuratively speaking, and complete this mission.
Well, it seems that, I know that the UK has a lukewarm support for Israel's right to, you know, fight for themselves. Canada is definitely standing with Israel on this one. But I'm worried about other world leaders. I know that Barack Hussein Obama came out today and condemned the kidnapping of that soldier. But he also comes out with rather contradictory statements in how Israel should conduct itself. He is contributing to the vilification of Israel, I think. But we know what Barack Hussein Obama is, and we know where his sentiments lie. But I cannot understand the world leadership that they will not stand 100% behind Israel to once and for all get rid of Hamas and bulldoze the Gaza. Israel gave Gaza a chance. Gaza blew it.
Well, yeah, but, you know, we know the fact that, look, all Western nations have leftist liberal governments, by and large, except for Canada. It has a conservative prime minister, although there are elements within your government that are very leftist, of course. All other Western nations have these type of governments. So they're not going to go and try to really do anything in the correct manner, and that's to show very strong support for Israel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not going to go against Israel 100%, but at the same time, what the left will do is they will portray this as if it's not necessarily the fault of Hamas. And it's astounding
mm-hmm.
because Hamas is a designated terrorist organization. But these are the times we live in where this kind of thing is, it's just not unusual. This is the danger of leftist ideology, and they have gotten into bed with the Muslim fascists, and they're a very deadly combination in a multitude
yeah.
of ways.
I am overwhelmed by the latest developments of the last couple of days, and of course we are all devastated by the kidnapping of Second Lieutenant Heather Golden. His father came out today and said that he's confident that Israel will get him back. Now, Israel has a staunch reputation of protecting their soldiers. As we know, in Israel, the IDF, it's a mandatory service in Israel to serve at least a term in the Israeli army, which this young person was doing. He, once again, was taken by the Gazans, just like Gilad Shalit was taken. Gilad Shalit was held for a number of years. He was traded for, and like you said, Michael, earlier, traded for the exchange of terrorists. It reminds me of an incident that happened a number of years ago, in that a woman, she was a so-called Palestinian. Of course, we call them the Gazan Arabs here on this program. She was nearly on her killed by being acid tested. She had acid thrown on her. She wandered into Israel, and Israel took her in the hospital, and they reconstructed her. She survived, and they gave her skin grafts. They sent her home, and her thank you was to wander into that very same hospital strapped with a suicide vest. And she wasn't coerced into doing this. She was serious in her commitment to support Hamas. Like, Israel works so very hard to try to reach across, and these are the Gazan Arabs. They have no sense of compassion. They have no sense of wanting to find a resolution for coexistence. At this point, Israel their hands are tied, and we have to do something about this, and we have to allow Israel to carry out the mission and get rid of Hamas once and for all. We have Movin still with us, and I'd like to ask Movin a question. Movin, if we had to choose, and I mean strongly choose, what would we choose? Would we choose to stand with Israel, or would we tell the world bodies to stay out of Israel's business, and that would include perhaps removing ourselves from the United Nations, who seems to be supporting Hamas?
Well, that's an interesting question, Kel. You know, there's what our governments do, and then there's, you know, how the people who live where we live feel in America and Canada, other places.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a big fan of the UN. I don't think that they do much for the American people. That's just me moving. And I'm not a big fan of countries that are condemning Israel, because they were attacked and they responded. And they're being faced with economic terrorism from all these missiles from the Hamas, as well as, you know, their people being harmed, because it's hard for them to conduct business and do their day-to-day activities of their economy. And I think the Hamas are simply trying to economically and, you know, use terror and hope that the rest of the Muslim world, you know, comes to their aid and jumps on the bandwagon and,
mm-hmm.
you know, just wrecks Israel. That's the whole thing Hamas is trying to do. And any country that condemns Israel, well, you know, that's just not a good idea. Just not a good idea. They've been through enough. They've never really started anything that wasn't on their doorstep as a threat that they didn't have to take care of. And they've used great restraint. But if people were throwing rockets here where I live, I'm sure not only would the government respond, but the people would respond. So
exactly.
Maybe I think Israel's doing a great job keeping their own people in check. You know, they're doing a great job. So, but I guess to answer your question, I'm not high on the UN. They interfere with our national politics in the United States all the time, and I'm not big on the UN condemning Israel on what's going on. And that's only because we have a lot of biased representatives there.
Yeah.
I'm not a big Agenda 21 fan, and that's what the UN appears to be pushing. And that's kind of my reply. I hope I answered your question.
You did. You did. I appreciate that so much, Movin. yeah. The one salient point that I really like that, well, you brought up many salient points, but the one in particular, of course, I mean, for goodness sake, what if Toronto was lobbying rockets into, New York State? What are you going to do, just sit there and take it? No, you're going to fight back. And this is what Israel is doing. This is not... this is retaliatory. This is an offensive, a defensive. The Gazans have engaged in an offensive attack. Israel is fighting back in a defensive manner. I think that the world bodies do have to stay out of it, and I probably have said this about 14 million times on the program, but I can't say it enough. I think the UN should be, well, that building, it should be vacated, and maybe, turn it into public housing.
Well, Cal, hypothetically, because you brought up a hypothetical scenario about Toronto and New York State, well, could you just make it a little further, and if Toronto would do us a favor and get rid of the UN building, that would be great.
Hey, you know what? We could do something wonderful like that. You know what? Maybe you hit the base and have that thing tip into the East River?
Oh, you know, I think they could use more condos in New York. You know, maybe Donald Trump would invest in that project.
Trump Towers.
Happy Friday.
I would love that. But I think what we should do is that we really have to reconsider our position with the UN, because it's no longer what it was when it was established in 1947, and that was to ensure that there would be a watch body to watch out for our Western interests. It seems to be infiltrated, the OIC, the Organization of Islamic Conference, it used to be called Cooperation, they have made heavy inroads into the UN. They influence the UN, and the UN is going along with this. The OIC is Heinz 56 plus 1, believe it or not, that the Palestine, and people, when I say the Palestine, I use air quotes because I do not believe in the artificial entity called Palestine, but they were granted voting rights and within the OIC, which is part of the UN. I think that it's time to move the UN headquarters somewhere in the Middle East. And Michael, what do you think about that?
The UN is an inept organization. It doesn't accomplish anything. You can go back to the time in Jafar, in the Sudan, when the Islamist government in Khartoum were slaughtering via proxy in Jafar. And then you had the civil war going back to 1989 in the Sudan, where a few million Christian Sudanese were slaughtered by the Islamist government, and the UN had nothing to say about it. The UN today has been hijacked by the OIC, and they accomplish absolutely nothing. What they do accomplish, of course, is that they will, at any opportunity given, use it to vilify the nation of Israel. So,
mm-hmm.
No, they do nothing good. They're going to be existing for a long time. You know, realistically, we're not going to get rid of them. It's just a bunch of asinine, pompous diplomats, you know, feel important, and they sit around and pontificate, and they talk a lot of utter nonsense and stupidity, and they always stick their nose in the business of any sovereign nation like Israel is just trying to defend its citizens and come up with all kinds of garbage. I try not to pay any attention to them, honestly. I mean, they're just an utter waste of time. They're a worthless organization, and they accomplish nothing good in the world, whether it's the conflict in Israel or, you know, look at any other major conflict that the UN has attempted to intercede. You know, what have they actually done?
Yeah.
You know, they have not done anything. But there is a new development now. The hierarchy of Hamas in Gaza is stating that they are not apprised of the whereabouts of this soldier, and they're saying that they're not in contact with the Hamas fighters that allegedly took him hostage. So now there's some new information being disseminated, and, you know, you can't really trust them as to what the truth is. You know, he could have succumbed to his wounds if he was wounded. Remember, it was a suicide bomber. If you know anything about how that works, those vests are packed with projectiles. I had the opportunity, unfortunately, to visit several United States service members who had been wounded in Afghanistan from Muslim suicide bombers.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it does pretty devastating damage. They put nails and ball bearings and other, you know, things that, you know, they can tear and shred the flesh and, of course, end your life pretty quickly or certainly maim you. So we'll just have to monitor the development and see what happens. You know, do they really have him? Is he still alive? I don't think Israel's going to predicate its future decisions. The Israeli cabinet just finished a five-hour meeting earlier this evening, and I think tomorrow the deliberations they had will be hopefully released to the public. But I believe at this stage that they will be moving forward full force with their military operation, and I think that they will be rejecting any future attempts to bring about some type of truce or ceasefire. I cannot conceive for a minute after what happened today, earlier this morning, that they would entertain, you know, any kind of cessation of their operation. Also, let's just understand militarily, when you start a military operation, momentum is everything. And it is really essential that you keep that momentum going and that you are making progress on the ground. You know, Israel's not going in there to really hold ground. They're going in there to take out the tunnels and to target the Hamas fighters. And so they need to keep that pressure on, and they need to forget about any kind of ceasefires and even a humanitarian ceasefire, you know, because let's look at the facts here. All this humanitarian aid that went into Gaza over the years and years has been used primarily by Hamas. And there are people suffering in Gaza right now. Well, you know what I would say to them? Well, you chose this terrorist organization to be your leader. You chose them to be the ruling party within your territory where you live. And it's a tough pill to swallow, but now you got to kind of deal with it. It's unfortunate. You know, it is a tragedy when human beings are maimed and killed in war, you know, non-combatants, so to speak. But remember, in Vietnam, there were scores and scores of Vietnamese who were supporting the Viet Cong, the VC. And they were giving them aid in different ways. They weren't fighting. They didn't pick up a gun and go to fight our soldiers, but they were aiding the enemy. In my estimation, if you aid the enemy that's trying to kill my people, okay, my guys on the battlefield, you're a target.
Absolutely. And Doc in the chat room brought up a very, 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 very good point in that he says Israel should give them 3 months to evacuate Gaza and then reoccupy it. If they do not leave, they will be forcibly deported to Jordan. Michael, I could not agree with that statement more.
Well, I don't see how at this juncture that once hopefully the IDF takes out Hamas, that they can not occupy that area. You know, because what will happen is that you may have another entity pop up, which has been, you know, discussed, that if Hamas is taken out, you know, well, what will happen? Will another organization spring up, and could it be worse or whatever? Well, you know, that's not even the issue. I don't think the Gazan people have the right to that territory anymore. In 2005 and 2006, it was given back by Ariel Sharon, the president, the prime minister of Israel. It was called Gush Katif. 10,000 Israeli settlers were evicted. The Israeli army went in and evicted their own people. It was a horrific thing to observe. And all the wonderful things that these Israeli settlers had built, you know, all these great things they had done, because Israel, you know, is a wonderful country. The Jews are smart. They built a prosperous, blooming nation. And, you know, what the Arabs did in Gaza, they destroyed it because it was, you know, created by Jewish hands. They're so filled with hatred. So they destroyed all that. So they were given back this land, and Israel left. The IDF was no longer there. The so-called occupation ended. Then they called it a blockade. Well, the blockade ensued because of the scores of terrorist fighters that had infiltrated Israel and, you know, were detonating bombs on buses and in restaurants and, you know, throughout the nation of Israel. So I don't believe at this juncture that these people should be permitted to live in that area. Now, where they're going to go, I can't tell you. You know, and if they are permitted to live there and the IDF stays there, then, of course, there's going to be all this resentment, and they're going to start with that occupational garbage again. Well, you know, we're being occupied. Well, there's a reason why Israeli soldiers need to be in Gaza City to keep you savages from, you know, creating another massive network of terrorist tunnels and, you know, accumulating massive quantities of weapons, you know, to come back into Israel and just to kill Jews.
Absolutely.
Wow.
And, gentlemen, pardon me, we have somebody here that would like to contribute to the conversation, and this is Annie of Southern Senses, Common Sense. She has a very prolific radio program heard right here on Blog Talk Radio and other fine websites. And Annie, welcome to the program. I need to come up with that.
You knew there was going to be no sanity here. No sanity. Oh, man, after a couple of sakis and a few scotches, you want sanity? Anyway, you know, what you're talking about is extremely serious, and we're talking about what's happening in Israel. And what really bugs me is that no one's paying attention that what is happening there is now happening on our borders. We have Humas that is working with the cartels to build these tunnels. Now, Israel was shocked when they thought it was only 30 or 40 tunnels to find out it was thousands of tunnels on the border of Israel.
Oh, yeah.
Such a tiny little area, smaller than the area of Long Island, New York, and now we have this massive border of California, Arizona, New Mexico, Texas. We're not talking about thousands of tunnels. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of tunnels. And they're here, guys. They are here. They are here. They're in Israel.
Yeah.
And we are turning around and telling Israel, don't defend yourself. What are you, excuse my language, but effing idiots? You're telling someone that if they were to break into your home, you do not defend yourself? You're telling someone that they're stealing your life savings, every single piece of your possessions, and raping your children, that you do not defend yourself? What,
bingo.
Are you freaking crazy? Who are you to tell Israel that they cannot defend themselves? Have you ever been in attack? No. You're the liberal that's going to go, oh, please, just say, don't hurt me. Excuse me, that doesn't work. All that does is invite further violence and subjugation. And so, catch that word, subjugation.
Yeah.
What do you think extremist Islam is about? Subjugation. What do you think socialism is about? Subjugation. What do you think fascism is about? Subjugation. What do you think communism is about? Subjugation. What do you think the American Republic is about? Freedom. And they want to subjugate us. I say, hell no. Hashtag Congress in your face. Hashtag Congress fight.
Annie, explain exactly what you do on your prolific radio program. You are the host of Southern Sense's Common Sense Tuesdays and Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. You interview some of the most prolific people in the United States, and you are fighting very, very hard to defend your southern border. Of course, we're talking about the issues of Islam, but what you do is tireless as well. What I do is tireless as a counter-jihadist, as is Michael Green, and what Moving Forward does as well for the United States. I'm always so impressed when I can speak with such fine patriots.
I got to say something, because No Way did a little commercial ad, and I meant to play it on the show. No Way did a really fantastic ad about In Your Face to Congress, because Congress is now going on a 5-week vacation. And Kelly, you were with us. You were with us on Tuesday, and Sue, sweet Sue. Oh, she's such a. I love Sue. I love her.
Sue is joining us in the studio.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. One day I would love to meet her face to face, because this woman, God bless her heart. God bless her. With all the stuff she goes through, and she is nonstop. I am amazed this woman has the stamina and the energy she has. Because I don't go on Twitter every single night. I may go on maybe one or two days a week. And next thing I know, I see tons of Sweet Sue all over the place. Bless her heart, because, you know, to me, that's not important, but she does it. She plugs not just my show, but everyone else's. Sue, listen, trust us. You are not unappreciated. In fact, you are a godsend to all of us. None of us could ever say thank you enough. And know that every last one of us that sees you out there putting up those tweets and other posts, Sue, from the bottom of my heart, God has blessed me with your friendship, and it's not something I would.
I would love it if
ever lightly.
I would love it if Sue would press 1 on her dial pad and join the conversation, because she is in such good company. I like to think that I have a very intimate show and that we're a family here. And look at that. Sweet Sue just hit 1 on her dial pad.
Bless her heart.
So I am bringing in Sweet Sue right now.
She listened to our entire show, and, you know, Kel, do you understand that at one point we had 16 people on the line? We were juggling 16 people at one point. And Sweet Sue and Thomas from Thomas Dwayne Smith, who has his own show, neither one of them hit 1, but they were listening in. And I saw Sue there the entire time. And bless her heart, Sue. God has never given me a greater gift outside of my own life, my husband and my family. He gave me you as my friend. So I thank you, Sue.
And Sue, I'm so glad that you're joining us on the program. You've been listening to the premise of what's been going on in the Middle East, and I am blessed that I am surrounded by such wonderful American friends, and I think that parallels can be drawn. Sue, you live on the Mexican border. Let's just switch gears for a second. And Sue, tell us what's, well, first of all, hi, honey.
Hi,
how are you
Kel
feeling, Sue?
And Annie, I love you.
I love
you. How are
you
feeling,
too.
Sweet Sue? How are you feeling? Because I know the last time I physically spoke to you, you were having some problems, and you were debating whether or not you're going to go back in the hospital. I know, God bless, that you ended up not doing that, but how are you, sweetheart?
No, I'm doing really well. I'm healing, and the MRSA is coming under control. So God
is taking
care of me.
Thank God.
I am so glad, though, that you're joining us tonight, because it's been a rather interesting and, I hope, informative discussion. We're talking about what's going on in the Middle East. But Sue and Annie and Moving and Michael, just please excuse me for a moment while I address these two ladies, because they're both living on border states.
No. The only border I have is North Carolina, Georgia, Tennessee, and the Atlantic Ocean.
Okay, I thought you were on a border state. Okay, my apologies.
Oh, no, ma'am.
But
no,
Sue,
ma'am.
Sue
I've got the ocean,
is on a border state. Yeah.
But you've got to understand, every single state with an international airport is a border state.
Oh, yeah, true enough, true enough. But what Sue, what you're enduring, we're talking about, you know, talking about Israel and Gaza and what they're enduring. Their benevolence has really blown up in their faces, as it has in the United States with the border states and now the open border. We know that South Americans are coming in droves, but we also know that Muslims are in the mix as well. And Sue, I'm wondering, how are things with you in terms of that right now? Is it getting worse and worse?
Oh, yes, it's getting worse and worse. And, you know, people don't know it. It's not getting out there. There are now rotting bodies of children, drug cartels. It is indescribable. The stench is indescribable all along the Rio Grande. People have to understand how bad it is. There is gunfire. There is a war going on, almost not as bad as Israel, but almost as bad. When they try to get them over, they spray with submachine guns. The gunfire and the battles is absolutely horrendous. But I want to go back. You know, I've been reporting, and as far back as 4 years, they have been finding these tunnels. And these tunnels, I know people have seen the tunnels in the middle.
Yeah.
The tunnels they're finding now look exactly like that. The terrorists are coming over, and they have been coming over for a while. I think it was 3 years ago there were special ops, ex-special ops, and they're still out there. And they go on reconnaissance, and they're trying to give the Border Patrol, you know, where the coyotes are and, you know, to help protect them. They found a cave, you know, and this is where they stay, up into the mountains. And this cave had jihad writing. There was a Quran. There were prayer rugs. They were there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're there now. And, you know, people are shocked. They're finding, oh, prayer rugs and things like that. Well, they've been finding that for a while. But they have not been reporting it in the press. And even now, they are not reporting the extent of it. But I guarantee you, there are going to be some terror attacks in the United States. And they will have come walking freely across the border. And that's the way it is. So what Israel is experiencing, you know, in a small way, we are experiencing it right now on our border. And a lot of these people and this violence is Hezbollah. And it is, you know, it's not just the drug cartels. They are already starting to wage jihad in the United States. And now
oh,
it is going through all the state borders as they transverse throughout the United States.
Well, Kel Sue is 100% right. Now, actually,
yep.
I happen to have been sitting in a doctor's office, and this was prior to the 9/11 attacks. I believe it was a year or two prior. And for the life of me, I've been trying to find the news article I was reading. I would have sworn it was Newsweek. It could have been Time magazine. And 2 years prior to 9/11, they were talking about OTMs coming across the border. Now,
oh, yes, I remember that, yeah.
And I cannot, for the life of me, you can scrub the Internet and cannot find that article. That article was pulled down. I'm telling you, true fact. And I was reading this at a doctor's office, and this was not an article. It was only just a one- or two-paragraph article. This was a four-page article that went in depth. Now, this was under, remind you, George W. Bush. So, of course, they gave it full play. Come 9/11, once 9/11 hit, that article disappeared. That article warned about OTMs, other than Mexicans
yep.
coming over the border, and they named specifically Saudi Arabians, Pakistanis, Iranis, Yemenis.
Oh, yeah.
And they named all these countries that the terrorists are now currently inhabiting. There weren't any Egyptians at that time because Egypt at that point in time was a steadfast ally with Mubarak in charge. We screwed that one up big time with Morsi and the Muslim Brotherhood. But at that time, you may have a few Jordanians. You may have had a few from Lebanon, but they were very, very far and few. But you had the main terrorist countries sending them over, and Saudi Arabia topped the list. And they're coming over in that article, and they're calling them OTMs. And you're thinking, all right. And I said, I read this 2 years before, you know, 2011, so that was, you know, 1999. I retired in 1996, and I can tell you what I had to deal with illegal aliens when I was a cop. But no one was paying attention. No one was paying attention. And then as it progresses, I see the influence of CARE and Muslim Brotherhood's organizations within the United States and their assault on our religious liberty, their assault on our freedom of speech. And when a company like Best Buy, which is nationwide, sponsors a CARE convention in Kansas City, now going on, I believe it's now 4 years ago, I can go back to one of my shows where I did a huge, huge rant on that one. I will never walk into a Best Buy again. Folks,
oh, absolutely
not.
When
you go out and shop, when you go
Kel, I've got a little bit to add.
Look to see who your company
is associated with, and
don't do that.
Yep. Moving. We're actually winding down the show. I would like to give everybody 2 minutes for closing points. Moving, please go ahead.
Yes. 15 miles from where I live, just a week and a half ago, they were going to put a significant number of illegal aliens at the Army Reserve Center. The local residents and farmers of that city in Maryland found out about it. They protested, and they didn't show up, but these people had no kind of screening, carried all kinds of diseases ranging from hepatitis to typhoid, all kinds of strange things, could have really devastated the local area, and needless to say, they sent them somewhere else. I hope it wasn't your town to anyone listening. And also keep in mind our southern border's porous. For several years prior to today, there's the mean published in many different places. It was about 6,000 people died due to the cartel wars in Central America and Mexico. 6,000 a year. It was going on for a decade straight. So what we're seeing is the refugees from that ongoing war that's still going on. And it's not only Muslims. It's Muslims from Asia as well, crossing the border every day. So that's what's going on. At home here and on the border.
Wow. Wow, wow,
Amen,
wow.
Brother. Amen, brother.
Oh, Moving, I want to thank you so very much. This is going to be a very interesting topic that we could showcase, whether it be on Red Fox Blogger or Southern Sisters Common Sense. Moving, I want to thank you very much for joining the program.
Take care now, Kel. Put me on mute there so we can hear all these awesome remarks from these awesome folks.
I will do. Annie, I want to thank you very much for joining the program as well. You are absolutely fantastic, and I'm so excited to be part of your panel on your program. And what you said is instrumental in people understanding. This is definitely, we had so many topics that are worth further exploration, so Annie, give us a minute of your time and tell us what you do on your radio program.
Well, first, I want to thank Moving, because Moving Forward, he's a great guy. I mean, he came in one time on my show, and we had a little pissing contest, but God bless him, because he understood that, you know, in the end, we all are fighting for the same cause. So, Moving, God bless you and the fight you carry forward. I cannot say enough about Sweet Sue. She knows how much I love her. I'm just a nobody. And
you're very much a somebody.
Well, God gave me this platform, and all I do is I step back and let others better than me come forward and, you know, put their items before, whether it's through jihad, whether it's through an election and a candidate, whether it's through a patriotic singer or something else. I mean, if I find someone that can further the cause of the United States of America and the Republic and the founding principles, I will. I'm just a platform, and I thank God that he gave me this chance to do it. I'm just his servant, and let him give me what I can, and I will carry it forward. That's all I can say.
Annie, thank you so very much. I'm so looking forward to being on your show.
Well, you're my co-host
Tuesday,
along with Dan, so you're stuck.
Oh, yeah, me and Dan, we goof off, and hey, Annie's like raising her hand. Can I say something?
Well, it's no longer Southern Sense. It's the Dan and Kel show.
Oh, we do create havoc there.
Well, if I can get paid for this, this should be even better.
Annie, thank you so very, very much.
Well, here's the
Right on. Hey, I'll be talking with you over the weekend.
Good girl. Thank you.
Okay. And Sue, thank you very much for joining us tonight. You are tireless in your work, in what you do. It's not only the tweets that you do, but it is behind-the-scenes works with the politicians. It's everything that you do, Sweet Sue from New Mexico. I am truly indebted to you joining me tonight because you are my mainstay. People do know by now that before I go to air, especially on Fridays, if Sue is there and before the show starts taping, I have a little bit of a pep talk with Sweet Sue. And I say, Sue, I don't know what I'm doing. So, Sue, I want to thank you so very much.
Oh, you're welcome, Kel. And, you know, I want to tell people, and I want them to listen, we can make a difference. I was just reading an article out on Breitbart that the bill in the House, the immigration bill, the reason it was pulled was because people calling in melted the phone lines to the Congress.
Yeah.
And it scared them. And we've got this In Your Face campaign. I already have people asking me for information. I'm working on a website. There'll be more to come. But whether it's in Canada, UK, wherever it is in the world, you have to get involved. And you have to confront the politicians. You have to let them know your feelings. So anyway, In Your Face, it's going to go on for 5 weeks during the congressional recess.
Fantastic.
That we're asking everyone, I'm asking them to take their cell phones, videotape, town hall meeting, you know, whatever they have, where these representatives are who want to go back, you know, to Washington, be reelected, record it. Put it on YouTube. Let the nation see. And I really think we can make a difference. I'm going to be putting out for each state where they can find the schedules of their representatives. And this is really daunting for me, but it's something we have to do.
It's got to be done. Sue. Thank you so very much for that. Can you perhaps come back on the air to expand on that in the future?
Oh, yeah, just let me know. And like I said, I'm just getting it up. Noe's made a show promo that can be played for it. Like Annie said, there's a YouTube video that I'm starting to get out to people. And then as soon as I can, I'm going to find a website. I have a few possibilities where people can go to get all this information they need. So I'd love to. Thank you, Kel. And thank you, everyone. It was a great show.
Thank you, Sue, so very much. And believe me, this has been a real treasure trove of a show for me. Finally, I want to thank Michael Green, who has brought so much to the table tonight. We discussed a lot about what's going on in the Middle East. We were fortunate to have so many fine people. Michael, I want to thank you so very much.
Thanks, Kel.
It's going to be great. Everybody is... Do you have any parting words, Michael? We still have a few minutes.
Yes, I do. I would ask everyone listening to pray for the nation of Israel. Please pray for their wounded soldiers.
Yes. Absolutely.
And any of their civilians who've been wounded. and pray for their success in this military operation, because it's really of the utmost importance that they make a difference this time, a substantial difference in taking down and degrading Hamas into an entity that can no longer threaten their nation and kill and harm their civilians. So they need a lot of prayers, because it was the will of God that brought the nation of Israel into existence in the first place. God came to the Jewish people thousands of years ago. He gave them that land. They lost it in AD 70 when the Romans sacked Jerusalem. They were spread out through the world in what's called the Diaspora. Many Jews have returned to Israel. And in 1948, God brought them back into being as a nation. And, of course, they've been under relentless attack from their neighbors, Muslim, you know, fascist-type thinking people. So one thing we can do is we can pray for them. It's very important. God has much more power and ability than we do as humans.
Michael, thank you so very much for that. And on that note, we are closing out. We have run out of time. I want to thank you for listening to the Red Fox Blogger, and I wish you all a wonderful weekend. I will see you back here Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. Eastern Time with my co-host, Tim Burton. Ladies and gentlemen, please pray for Israel and pray for all of us. We need them. Good night, everybody. And remember, it's mass Islamity, and we have to stop the insanity.